What's going on, everybody? This is AJ Capasso here with Talking with the Source. I'm here with my beautiful girlfriend, Tammy. Tammy, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Great. We had a great day today, didn't we?
We did. We had a great couple of days.
Yeah, we did. We did. So, you know, things are working out well. Everything is going great. I hope everyone at home is doing well. I hope everyone is doing great at home. And also any of our podcast listeners that listen on Spotify, I hope you guys are doing great at home as well. Today we have a special guest. We are super excited to have this guest on. It's been a while. We've been trying to get him on, but he's super busy all the time, so we understand completely. But listen, this is a legend in the field, a veteran, very well-known person. His name is Joe Frank. Let me bring him forward. How are you, my friend?
Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
No, please. The honor is ours, please. Thank you for being on.
Yeah, we've been trying to get together for months now. We started this back in October, I think.
I know.
A couple things come up, and I had to keep rescheduling, so I'm glad we finally
Hey, it's all right. But, hey, Joe, I wanted to first ask you the question that we ask everybody is to tell our followers that don't know about you a little bit about yourself, about your background, so that they can understand a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
Well, I mean, I started in the paranormal field many, many years ago. I was 18 years old. And I was always interested in ghosts and things like that. And I knew who Ed and Lorraine Warren were. And yeah, I used to follow them through, print media and radio and TV. We didn't have the internet back then. It's much, we're talking 1986. I graduated high school in May or June of that year. And I think it was September of 86. I met the Warrens at one of their lectures. And one of the first things Lorraine said to me when she first met me was, she says, honey, you know, I'm reading your aura. She goes, I can tell you are meant to do this work. And she said, would you like to come and work with us and be one of our students? They had a handful of students at the time. And we used to meet up at a place called Holy Manor in Newtown. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's now, I think, the Inn at Newtown. But back then it was Holy Manor. And
I've never heard of it.
It's like Monday nights from like 7 to 9. There's about a half a dozen of us. My girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife of 33 years. We've been together almost 40 years, 39 plus years.
And, God bless you. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't know. I've tried everything I could, but she won't get rid of me.
There you go.
I mean, I love telling the story because it's such a wonderful story. I have such a unique history. That's unique to me, obviously, as we all have history that are unique to ourselves. But Laurel had seen in the local newspaper that Ed and Lorraine were going to be lecturing in North Haven, Connecticut, which is one town over from where I live.
Yeah, and that's where I grew up.
Oh, North Haven? Really?
Yeah. I grew up there from 16 till I graduated high school, and then I lived there until I was like about 30 years old, and then I'm 36 now, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're just a baby.
Yeah,
I'm an old man now. I'm a veteran.
People be saying that though. I tell you, I don't feel it.
You see all the gray hair I'm getting. Well, I was too. A teenager. you still got some time. Laurel saw in the newspaper that the Warrens are going to be lecturing. So she was like, "Hey, instead of going to the movies tonight, why don't we go down there and see them speak?" So that's how I started. I didn't start actually working cases right away though. We did some classes and, we went on some, excursions with Ed and Lorraine but it was probably a couple of years before Ed let me go out on my own. I also doubled as security for them. I was a much, much bigger guy than I am today. And, used to go to the lectures and, sometimes you get people that have a little bit too much to drink and I call it liquid courage. And they used to, there used to be some hecklers. It wouldn't happen a lot. It wasn't like, every show, but every once in a while you get somebody that would get out of hand. And, Ed would just look at me and he's like, hey, kid, you want to take care of this? I'm like, okay. So I'd just go up to him and be very polite and say, look, can you please, keep it down, usually I didn't have to ask twice, but that was part of my training, because going to the lectures and listening to them speak, I got to learn a lot about their history and a lot of history of their cases, a lot of their more iconic cases that you may have heard about, like Amityville and the Harrisville haunting, which you guys know, probably know as the Conjuring House. That was just one of their cases back then. The Annabelle doll case and the Devil in Connecticut, the haunting in Connecticut, all these more iconic cases that some of them have gone in to have documentaries made about them on television and obviously theatrical releases as well. Very loosely based on the cases. Once Hollywood gets their talons into these stories, they take a lot of liberties with them, you know, which boggles the mind to me, because in my opinion, in some of the things, especially in the cases I've been dealing with, if you tell the real story the way it really happened, it's far more terrifying than, you know.
Yeah.
I've always wondered that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Hollywood, I mean, what's the end? The end goal is to put butts in the seats and money, you know, to make money. And I get all that. But, you know, I've shied away from that my entire career, because to me, it's not about money. This is a labor of love. This is a vocation, not an occupation for me. You know,
yeah.
We don't charge to help people. My folks that I work with very closely, and there are a lot of them. We do this to help people. Where we make any money is through our lecture system, when we're lecturing or going to, if I get invited to some of these Paracons and things like that. I just came back just about a month ago from MegaCon down in Orlando. I tell you, down there, that is the biggest Comic-Con. It's not a Paracon, it's a Comic-Con, but it's like the second largest in the country next to San Diego.
Wow.
And then the third one is the Javits Center in New York. But it was an honor to be invited there. I've been invited there the last few years. And my good friend Bill Slevin, who lives down in Florida, coordinate all that. And they put he and I under the horror section. So they didn't have a paranormal section per se. They had a horror section. And they put us down on the main community floor. And God, I think it's a Thursday through Sunday event, and by Friday afternoon, I lost my voice. I think I had 6 or 7 panels that I did throughout the weekend, and I normally don't need a microphone when I speak, but I needed to use one there, because talking to this room of, you know, a few hundred people.
Definitely.
It's a great feeling. I love to talk about what I do, but what I love to do now is I love to educate. And not only educate the general public, but I want to educate the next generation of researchers. Those people that are really serious about this work, not the people on YouTube that want to just go to the old cemeteries and, you know, abandoned hospitals and things like that. I mean, that's great for entertainment and fun, but that's not what I do. You know, like I said, I have a very unique history of how I've come up through the paranormal field through the years. There's not too many people that have my history with the Warrens. There are a few. There's a good friends of mine, like John Zaffis and Jimmy, Mr. Haunted, Jimmy Pettinino, Rick Clark, Frank Schiaffari, you know, good friends of mine I've known for many, many years, almost 35 years. And we all kind of came up together, all learning, working with Ed and Lorraine and learning from them. And I've learned a lot on my own too. I study, you know, a lot of stuff with the Catholic Church, Catholic exorcists. I'm involved with the Solomonic Order of St. Michael the Archangel with some good friends of mine, like Father Ken Torres and Father Bob Bailey with the Holy Sword Apostolate. You know, we're all like a big, massive team. And I'm involved with Wardruna, which is a team of psychics and social workers and therapists and psychologists. So we're, you know, what you have to do is in this work is you have to have the gift of discernment. You know, you got to discern between what is real and what's fantasy, what's good and what's evil. You know, you don't want to just take in every stray that comes along. Somebody says I'm haunted or I need an exorcism or something like that. It doesn't work that way. You have to discern between what cases are real, what may be, you know, a form of psychosis or schizophrenia or some kind of other psychiatric disorder where someone thinks that they have a demonic entity attached to them. Now, you know, given that statement, someone can have a mental illness and still have a demonic entity attached to them. But yeah, it's very rare. Demonic activity is very rare. I want to make sure your audience knows that. It's very rare. And possession, full-blown possession, is rarer still, but it does exist. You know.
I wanted to ask, for in your all the time that you've been doing this work, which is many years, what is the scariest thing that you've seen?
Scariest?
Yeah.
Well, there's been quite a few things that we've seen.
I bet.
One of my earlier cases, I'll tell you about this one because this one is intriguing, was I was in a home that, and I was with Ed at the time and a couple other people, and Ed was doing what we called religious provocation. He was provoking, which is something that, you know, most people should not do. It's you know, taking a religious relic, you know, like a rosary or a blessed crucifix or holy water, and commanding in the name of Jesus Christ for something to reveal itself or show itself, you know, that's very dangerous. That's something that we call divination, like using a Ouija board and stuff like that. But religious provocation. And I was attacked myself. I mean, I was like 360 pounds, you know. I was a weightlifter back in the day. I was never skinny. Still not. But I was picked up and thrown. I was thrown about 12 feet across the room. I had a soda bottle hit me in the face. Got me my blood coming out of my nose. You know, these things are real, and you know, it's not something that people should be go out looking for. It's very dangerous to be going into allegedly haunted places, but you know, it's dangerous to go in there and use this divination or provocation methods. You know, just to get evidence, for the thrill of it. Because if you do get an attachment, it's very hard to get rid of them. You know, if you get some kind of attachment, God forbid a demonic attachment, now you're kind of in deep trouble. It's not something you just wipe off you. You know, so you need to be strong emotionally and psychological, but you also need to be very strong spiritually when you do this work. You know, so it's just, you know, I'm going into my education mode now because people need to know this, and the researchers out there, there's a lot of good people doing good work and good research, but then there's just as many people that are just doing it for the thrill of it. And I don't see the fun in this. I just don't see where this is fun to people. I deal with residential cases. I don't do public investigations and things like that, unless it's part of a conference or something I'm doing, and we do it for fun, you know.
Yeah.
But you got to be careful there as well, you know. But we help people and families, frighten people. You know, I've got a case now that just came in through the church outside of Philadelphia that I'm working on. It's I believe it's a case of demonic oppression, and the families. You know, families get some young children that are being attacked. And, you know, it's something that we take very seriously. We're watching it closely. I have to be careful, too. I've had some health problems of late I'm dealing with, and been in and out of the hospital a couple of times. And I if I'm not strong enough, I can't go, you know, because
that's
I
was going to ask you something along those lines. Like when you're handling cases like this, how do you protect yourself?
Well, that's an excellent question, Tammy. People ask me all the time, what's the best protection? And I said, the best protection is your faith. You know, people's like, well, should I go out and buy a crucifix or holy water or something? I said, well, it doesn't mean anything. Those items are just, you know, just inanimate objects that if you don't have the faith behind them, you know, faith is believing in something that common sense tells you not to. I always say that, to coin a phrase from the movie Miracle on 34th Street, you know, but it's very true. You know, faith is believing in something you can't see or feel or touch, you know, and if you have faith in those objects and you're very rooted in your whatever faith you may have, whatever religion you subscribe to, then you should be safe. Otherwise, you just can't just walk around with holy water and, you know, think that that's gonna fight it. It's actually gonna have the adverse effect if you don't have the faith in it. It's just gonna, you know, these things are just laugh at you, right? I mean, they eat me for lunch.
You know, it's funny human being. You said that. It's funny that you said that because there was a time where we asked that question through a spirit box about crystals, about people who use crystals, and they actually it came through the box saying basically. The thing that you just said, you know, like they're inanimate objects and basically your belief into them is what causes them to do what they're supposedly doing. So like your belief and your intent is what's actually causing the effect of these inanimate objects that you put your faith into. So like, yeah. I completely understand what you just said, like completely.
It's all about free will and intention. You know, when you think about it, I was born and raised Roman Catholic. The Warrens were very Catholic. And so I learned in the Catholic way. And I've studied, you know, I've done some studying under Catholic exorcists and things like that. So I've learned about divination and exorcism and things like that. I've assisted in exorcisms. I'm not an exorcist, you know, but as a helper. As you know, and that's basically someone that, you know, stands by and you know, if need be, physically restrains the afflicted person so that they don't hurt themselves or the exorcist who's performing the ritual. But you don't want to, you don't even want to make eye contact. I remember Bishop McKenna used to say to us, don't look at it. He wouldn't say him or her. He would say, don't look at it, because he was referring to the demon. Because once he starts using the religious relics, the holy water, and the, obviously the words, the prayers, the demons will manifest, and it can get pretty ugly, and it's pretty scary to see. If you're not used to seeing something like that, it's very scary to see. People's eyes change color. I've seen eyes turn into like serpent's eyes. They've turned green, and their body contorts. They'll speak in different languages that the person couldn't possibly know. They'll have superhuman strength. I mean, throw me across the room like I'm a rag doll, you know, things like that. And it's very scary when you're involved with these things. So our job would be to protect the person, protect, you know, the bishop, and to pray, just to pray, you know, pray the Our Father, prayer to St. Michael, just to pray, but don't make eye contact. And Bishop McKenna used to say, don't look at it. Don't speak to it. If it looks at you and says something, don't acknowledge it. Just look away and continue to pray. And that stuff's very rare. But look at the world we live in. Look what's going on around us. We have free will, and in my opinion, God wants us to take that free will and choose Him. Most people probably choose the other guy, you know. But God won't meddle in our free will. He allows things to happen for a reason. And, you know, a lot of people look around and say, why would God allow this? You know, it's a terrible tragedy, a car accident, a young child gets killed or murdered, God forbid. You know, people say, you know, that's where people really test their faith. Because, like, why, if there's a just God, why would He let this happen? It's not up to us to question God. I mean, He has a plan for all of us. You know, when people start messing with fortune telling and soothsaying and, you know, oracles and things like that, you know, when you're trying to find out information about the future, that's where it can get dangerous. You know, I usually ask my audience, I say, if you folks, anybody here, if you were given the opportunity to know the date, the time, and the manner of your own death, would you want to know it? Would you want to know when you were going to die and how you were going to die? Most people wouldn't. Every once in a while, I get somebody who raises their hand, I'd kind of like to know. I'm like, okay, I respect that, but most people know, because we're not meant to know that. You know, I'd like to have the six lotto numbers for Monday and Tuesday night's drawing. But, you know, I'd also like to have a toilet made out of solid gold, but it's not in the cards, is it? So unfortunately, because of the world we live in and what's out there, there's a lot of evil in the world, you know. And not everything is evil. I mean, some people ask me in my lectures, well, Joe, how can we talk about a lot of this bad stuff? I said, well, that's because people want to hear that. I've got as many beautiful stories where we've helped people with what we call spirit rescue, where there might be a spirit attached to a person and we'll help, you know, pass that person over. They haven't crossed over. We'll help them cross over. Maybe have a loved one come and pull them over or something like that. We've got a lot of beautiful stories like that, too. you know, but it's usually the negative demonic stuff that people are really salivating for. I don't know why, but I've got plenty of stories on both sides to talk about.
Yeah, no, please keep
I mean, I think that, yeah, the spirit rescue thing, that would really touch with me more, honestly, because that's actually one of the reasons that I became an investigator to begin with.
Well, this is one way we help people, and that's why we have this whole network with Stacia and Tom, you know, with Wardruna. I mean, I have psychic ability. We all do. Mine is not as fine-tuned where I could sit down and do a reading, you know, with someone, unless I wanted to BS like some people do. But, you know, I wouldn't play with people's emotions like that. So, you know, people that claim they're psychic and really aren't shouldn't be doing this, because you're messing with people's lives and their emotions and things like that. And shame on those people. They know who they are. You know, I know who they are too, you know, but we have a gifted team of people that can help. Matter of fact, I was talking to Stacia last night about a personal issue that I have with an elderly woman up around the corner that my wife and I care for. And she gave me a message, you know, last night. She was very helpful. You know, but that's this is the good part of what we do. You know, it's always about helping people. You know, it's not about making money. It's not about getting famous. I mean, I don't care about that. Yeah. I really don't. I don't care about that. I was offered the show Ghost Hunters many years ago. I turned it down. Pilgrim Films contacted us back in 2001, I think it was. And I didn't know what the show would turn out to be. It's still on TV today. Great. You know, but I don't have any regrets. That's not what I wanted to do.
That's why I left the show I was working with, because I didn't feel like it matched up with my end goal, with the goals that I want to achieve, which is actually to help people. I want to learn and I want to help people. And I just, the goal is a different direction.
Well, you know, and you're the kind of people that I want to talk to. And, you know, I don't know everything. I don't profess to know everything. But after 40 years, I know a little bit. I know a little bit, you know, but you know, if someone's doing a show and their end game is entertainment and stuff like that, you know, God bless them. I don't have a problem with that. But you know, people that do that for entertainment purposes should let the world know, hey, this is just for entertainment purposes. You know, don't mislead people, because when you do that and you're making a profit, that's called fraud. And you know, I don't get caught up in the drama. Believe me, there's not a day goes by when I don't get a phone call or an email about something somebody did or somebody said. I'm like, why are you even telling me? I don't care. I'm not involved in this. I'm not going to get involved in any of the drama. I just want to continue the life's work and legacy of Ed and Lorraine and keep their legacy alive. Ironically, I am now the age that the Warrens were when I met them. You know, Laurel and I they were about the age that Laurel and I are now when we met them. And it's kind of come full circle for me. I know there's a lot of people out there that don't care for the Warrens or their methods, but they're not informed. They didn't know them intimately like I did. Mm-hmm. You know, I obviously defend their name, because I can speak intelligently of the character of the people I knew. You know, but the haters out there, I'm not going to waste my time or energy trying to change their mind. They can believe whatever they want. God bless them. But everyone's entitled to their opinion. I just say, make it an informed opinion, you know, and, oh, I did the research, or I read something, or somebody's cousin's brother, sister's girlfriend told me this. I don't care. If you want to know something about the Warrens, ask me. If I know the answer, I'll tell you, you know. But to bash people that are dead and no longer with us and can't defend themselves is reprehensible. You know,
it really is.
I don't get involved in any of that stuff, but if someone's got a problem or wants a question answered, reach out to me. I'll talk to you. You know, there's no hate here. I love everybody. I don't care. I'm a big teddy bear. I love everybody. You know, but,
I've had the opportunity to work with you. You were really awesome to work with.
Yeah. We had an argument with that SOB in the basement that night though.
Yeah, we did.
I wish I had an opportunity to go back there and take care of that, but if they want me to, they will. But some places like that also, they don't want to get rid of what's there, because that's
their problem.
And that's sad.
Wait. Wait, hold on. You don't just say that and then you don't tell the story of what you're talking about. Come on, guys. Now I'm all jealous. I want to know. You know?
Tammy, go ahead. You can tell it if you like.
We were working an episode of Dark Echoes that actually it's on the cutting room floor. But I got the opportunity to work with Joe, and we worked the basement where there was a so somebody had done like some, I think a spirit board or something, and they believe that it brought a negative entity. Yeah. And we did argue with it for sure.
Yeah, I this was a while ago. We're having a good time that night too. It's a very interesting place. But if I remember correctly, there were some human bones found down there.
There were. They found human bones in the furnace.
Yeah,
woman's femur.
Yeah, I don't know the story because that should have been turned over to the authorities, in my opinion. Yeah. I don't know what happened. But there was a negative. It wasn't demonic. I don't think it was anything demonic. But it was something. It was a negative human spirit. Very negative. You can have
Very.
You know, if you're an asshole in life, you could be an asshole in death. You know.
Absolutely.
But this guy, it was a male energy. He was very negative, and like, you know, all right, what's your problem? I mean, you're not scaring anybody here. You know, I mean, you know, look, I've been thrown across the room by demonic forces. You think I'm afraid of a human thing? Except my wife. Yeah. And I'm afraid of her.
Yeah.
Good reason. But that's too bad that episode, I don't know really what happened there, but, you guys are doing a great job filming and Matt did a great job interviewing and stuff. I'm not sure what happened. I don't remember the story. It was about, a year and a half ago or so.
100% but, sure what.
I remember I remember working with you in the basement there, and you had the divining rods and stuff.
Yep.
and they kept every time I would ask a question, you know, the divining rods seemed to be on point.
Oh, they were. We even got part of a name. I don't remember what it was, but we even got part of a name.
So AJ, you didn't know about that story?
No, I didn't hear about it. So I was super excited to hear about this.
Yeah, it was an interesting place. I think it was the S.K. Pierce Mansion.
It was the S.K. Pierce.
Awesome.
It was an interesting case. There definitely was something there because I could feel it. You know, when I go into a place, if there's something dark, I usually feel it. My cackles, the hairs will stand up. I'll know, I'm like, okay, there's something here, you know. A lot of times I can't see it, whereas someone with more psychic ability would actually be able to see these things. I don't normally see them myself. I can feel them. I know they're around. Demonic things usually hide in the shadows. They don't want to be brought into the light. That's the last thing they want. That's why you have to use this with religious provocation to provoke them. You know, Ed told me one day, he's like, you know, kid, he's like, imagine taking a stick and there's a tiger in front of you, but he's in a cage, thank God. He said, you take that stick and you poke that tiger in the eye. How many times do you think that tiger's going to let you do that before it takes a swat at you? You know?
Yeah.
So you're provoking. You know, it's like you're standing in front of me and you're pushing each other. Eventually someone's going to take a swing, you know, and that's the same thing that happens in this. But it's not something that you should really be doing if you don't know what you're doing. It's dangerous for even the most seasoned veteran to be doing something like that. But you need to draw it out of the shadows sometimes to discern what you're dealing with. You know, what are we dealing with exactly here? And then sometimes you'll get a response, an overwhelming response that you may not have expected. You know, we had, like I said, that case where I was tossed across the room. I'm like, I had no idea what happened. I was just, people like, geez, Joe, weren't you scared? I go, yeah, I was scared. I was 22, 23 years old, you know, and I my brain tried to figure out what just happened to me. And I was terrified.
What did it feel like?
It was almost felt like I was pushed and pulled at the same time. All of a sudden I was here, then I was there. I went about 10 or 12 feet. I smashed up against the wall, my right shoulder. I remember I put a dent in the wall. And, I got up and I was so disoriented. I was angry. I remember I was angry. I'm like, you mother, I was so mad that I felt violated in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
But that one I remember because I tell that story a lot, because that was kind of an initiation to me into the world of demonic forces, because human spirits can push you, they can scratch you, they can touch you, but they're not going to be moving a 360-mile man like that, okay? That's superhuman strength right there, you know? And I've been punched, burned, scratched, bitten, you know, like I said, thrown across the room. It's happened a lot over the last 40 years, but, you know, it's not something that I'm proud of. You know, it's not, I hope it never happens again, because I'm old now, you know, I don't want to break something. But as I said earlier, with my health issues that I've been fighting for the last couple of years, I have to be careful. I have to be smart about things. And if this case that I'm working on outside Philadelphia turns into something, I will go there, but I won't go there unprepared. You know, and not only physically, but also spiritually. You know, you have to be in a space of what, a state of grace or a state of absolution. You know, so what I mean by that is I go to confession, confess all your sins and be absolved of those sins. Because if you go up against the demonic and you have any sins that you haven't confessed, it'll know, and it'll call you on it. You know, and it happens to even some of the clergy. You know, it's a very fascinating field. You know, unfortunately, there's not too many people that I know that are really serious about it. You know, I've got a lot of friends and colleagues that I came up, you know, through the years with that do a lot of good work, that have a lot of experiences that I have, you know, but what you see on YouTube and television today, it's not real. You know, some of the shows are very entertaining and I like some of them. They're very well done and edited very well. But, you know, I'm like, you know, I turn to my wife sometimes. I'm like, if these people really were involved in a demonic case, they would shit themselves. They wouldn't know what to do.
Oh, yeah.
And it scares me. Well, it scares me. I'm not trying to knock anybody. I'm just saying it scares me because they know not what they do. You know, I would say people mock what they don't understand. And if you don't understand what you're doing, you know, if you're only, you know, claim to any sort of education in the paranormal is watching TV shows, you're in trouble. You know, you're in trouble. You really need to study about this and spend the 40 years doing it before you go, you know, kicking down doors and saying, come and get me. Because what are you going to do when they do come and get you?
Right. Exactly. And I know you said that you had like a lot of appearances coming up that you're going to be doing. I was just wondering, are any of them like educational?
Well, yes. My calendar's starting to fill up for the year. It's only March. Unfortunately, I do a lot of public libraries in Connecticut. I think last October I had 22, events in 31 days. And I was exhausted, but you know, I do a lot of libraries through September through November, usually that time frame. Because, you know, let's face it, Halloween, spooky season. I get that. Yeah. But I have a program. I put together a PowerPoint. I'm actually working on a new one now. I try to change it up every year where I'll show video evidence, audio evidence, photographs from cases that I've worked through the years, some of the stuff, I also offer lectures. I'll talk about Annabelle and Amityville as it was told to me. I wasn't there, but my mentors, Ed Lorraine Warren, worked on these cases. The case in Connecticut, my good friend, John Zaffis and Chris McKinnell worked on that case. That's the Snedeker case here in Southington, which is about 15 minutes from my house. You know, so I want to study those cases so I can speak intelligently about it. So I can tell the story. However, I wasn't part of that. I remember the haunting in Connecticut. Ed said to me, he goes, you know, kid, he always called me kid. He's like, you know, kid, I got a case, a really bad case right up near where you live, but you're not ready for it yet. That case ran, I think, 86 to 88. I joined in, the latter part of 86. So he's right. I wasn't ready for it. Would I have gone? Absolutely. You know? Scared out of my mind, but that's how you learn sometimes. You got a baptism by fire, know,
absolutely.
But to answer your question, Tammy, I try. I'm a big dumb animal. I'm a big clown. I like to joke around. So I have a lot of fun with my audience, but there's an educational message in there. So when it's time to get serious, I have a whole section where I talk about divination, okay, which is basically like fortune telling, trying to find out information about the future or hidden knowledge, okay? And the most common instrument today is the Ouija board. Board, yes, it's a board game, all right? However, it's the intention and the free will that you put into it. What is your intention in using a Ouija board? Well, why use a Ouija board unless you want to find out something about your future or you want to make contact with spirits? That's very, very dangerous. You know, and if you've used one and you've had no adverse effects, God bless you. But, you know, I'm just saying, why spin the wheel and take a chance? You know, Ouija boards, seances, crystal balls, even that divining rods, you know, that those things can be dangerous if you're using them and you're not experienced with it. Even tarot cards. When I did the event in Newtown, AJ, where I saw you guys, there was a woman that she came up to me after I was walking out of the lecture hall. And she said, you know, Joe, at first when you were talking, I got angry. And she goes, but then when you followed up, she goes, I said, wow, he's right. So I was talking about seances and tarot cards. And she's like, I've been using tarot cards for 30 something years. But you're right. I said, well, if you know how to use them and you do them correctly, let me explain about a little what I'm talking about. When you're a psychic medium, if you're using your gifts, whether you use tarot cards or something like that, if you get a message from the other side for a client, that's a gift. That's a gift. Okay. But if you're misusing those powers and now you're trying to find information that's not meant for you to know, okay, that's divination. That's not good. You know, I always say God has our futures mapped out for us, and he gives us our free will to make it what it is. But, you know, don't mess with that, because that could be very
dangerous. That's a fine line right there. That's a scary fine line, you know?
It is scary. And, you know, I just tell folks, you know, people have come to my lectures. I had a guy in Westport, Connecticut. I remember he was sitting there, and I joke around. I say, how many people here, you know, don't believe in ghosts? You know, I get a couple people raise their hand, you know, sheepishly. He said, how many people are here because you had nothing better to do tonight? You know, and there was one guy that kind of laughed, and I said, are you a believer? And he's like, not really. He goes, my wife dragged me here. I said, that's fine. I said, that's great. I said, if you're skeptical, I'm my own biggest skeptic, you know? I said, but maybe talk to me after the show. I'd like to see if you know, how you feel then. And he was really not a believer, you know, in this stuff. And I went through my program and showed him. And he came up to me, he goes, you know, you might really have something here. He goes, I'm really starting to think. I said, well, that's fine. I said, I'm like Fox News. I report, you decide. I'm not trying to change anybody's minds. I'm just telling you, look, this is my history. This is what I've been through. These are the cases I've worked on. And they don't always work out. I mean, you know, it's not like Hollywood. You go in there, you throw some, you know, holy water around and say a few prayers, and everything's fine. It doesn't work that way. Matter of fact, your average, you know, if someone's possessed, the average exorcism takes 3 to 5 years.
Wow.
You know, and that comes from, I believe, Father Gabriel Amort. You know, you don't just do one and done. If that's extremely rare for that to happen, but. I mean, the movie The Exorcist, you guys seen that movie, The Exorcist?
Yeah.
Based on a true story, started out with a Ouija board. It took 67 exorcisms to liberate that young boy, you know, and that's a good news story because that young boy grew up to be a NASA engineer for 40 years. He just died in 2020, you know, and I always wondered,
yeah, no one ever talked about it, so I always wondered what happened to him.
Well, yeah, his name was Ronald Edwin Hunkeler, and he was a NASA engineer, worked on the space shuttle program and all that. He went on to live a normal life, or as normal as possible. He just died at the age of 84 in 2020. So I talk about that case. That's a good news case. Then I talk about a bad news case. movies, which is Annalise Michelle. You know, the also known as, you know, the movie The Exorcism of Emily Rose. All right, that didn't end well. She ended up passing away. Not because she was killed directly by the demonic forces. Okay, what happened is of her own free will, she gave up. And she stopped eating and drinking. She was 66 pounds when she died. Very, very tragic.
I remember reading that.
You know,
I remember reading about it.
They physically beat the hell out of you. But, you know, you got to understand these things, these entities, whatever you want to call them, they're on a very short leash. They have to abide by what their creator says also. So they're on a short leash, but they only can do what God allows. You know,
I find it absolutely crazy. Like, you know, like, so whatever these entities are, right? Whether we call them demons, angels, it doesn't really matter. But whatever these entities are that communicate, that end up possessing people, that end up doing these things, these negative things, it makes you wonder what it is that's holding them back from doing the most damage that they want to do, or what it is, or why they're on that short leash. And not just saying like, okay, it's God, because I know that it's God, but I'm just saying like, what is actually stopping them? Like, what is it, like an energy? Is it a force field between us and the realm? You know what I'm saying? Like, what could it be that is stopping them from fully going rampant on us?
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, it's God, it's your faith. I mean, that's a very good question. It's really not one I can answer because I don't have that information. I just know that in all the work I've done and the studying I've done is that these entities, and they are angels. They're just fallen angels. We refer to them as demons. They're angels. They're just fallen angels. You know, they rebelled against God and they were cast out. And you know, Satan, Lucifer, he may be the head honcho there. And but they're, like you said, they're on a short leash because, you know, if something happens, if they hurt someone or do something or whatever, that's only because God allows it. And that's my faith that tells me that. People say, well, how do you know that? Well, I know that because I have faith. You know, there's people out there that don't have faith. There's people out there that may be listening and say, oh, Joe's full of it. And I'm like, well, that's fine. You can believe whatever you want. I'm not going to argue with you. You know, but I haven't been doing this for 40 years for no reason. You know, I haven't wasted, 40 years of my life on nothing. You know, that's why I do these educational seminars and things like that, because people that want to learn, you know, if you want to come out and just share a good ghost story, I'll accommodate you. You know, that's fine. But if you're a researcher, I don't even like the word paranormal investigator, because the investigation part of it is part of the research. The last thing you should do is load up the mystery machine and grab Scooby-Doo and go running out to someone's house. All right? Half cocked. Because you know how many phone calls and emails I've received over the years from these ABC paranormal, and like, Joe, we're out at this house and you know, something went flying across the room and we grabbed all our equipment and running out of there. You know, it's and now you really scared the client because they're like, we asked you to come in to help us understand what we're experiencing, and now you're scared and you're running out of here. Well, I've gotten calls from clients of people and also these groups themselves. I'm like, well, tell me what happened. And I try to help as much as I can. Usually it's, you know, consulting. I do a lot of consulting on the phone or through Zoom or something like that. You know, I'm not at liberty to just jump on a plane and go out to Sacramento. I mean, if I'm needed and there's a case out there, where they really need my help, I would do it, but I have to be careful with my own health. You know, now that I'm older, hopefully wiser, but now I'm dealing with, I have a heart issue that I'm dealing with, and my doctor and my wife have me on a short leash. Because I'm not impervious to attacks. Lately I've experienced a lot of demonic influence, let me just put it that way, in my life, with things in my own house that will happen here. But I protect myself, I protect my family, you know, and by protection, I mean, you know, my faith is the protection, you know.
Yeah.
But I've got so much going on, I have to be smart about it. And that's why I have a whole team of people, you know, that I try to mentor and pass on my knowledge to them. But these are all very knowledgeable, gifted people. These aren't just somebody that says, hey, I'm interested in being a paranormal researcher. And like, you know, and when I talk about this stuff to my audience, I said, if there's any researchers in my audience, please don't take this the wrong way, because I was once where you are now. All right. Yeah. Like I said, I was an 18-year-old snot-nosed teenager. I didn't know my ass from my elbow, you know, and I'm still not snot-nosed. I say I have three children. My wife has four, you know, because I'm a big Toys R Us kid. I never wanted to grow up, you know, but when it's time to get serious about this, I tell people, you know, Zach Bagans, I said to him one day, I'm like, dude, you shouldn't be messing with this. I know you're a showman. I know this is what you do, and you're very successful at it. God bless you. But if you're going to stand there and say things like, if this is the gates of hell, why don't you rise up and get me? That's not a smart thing to say. That's not a smart thing to say. You know, you think the demons are going to go, oh, this guy just opened the door wide open for us. You think they're going to say, oh, he was just kidding. He's just doing it for TV. Mm-mm. You open that door. You open that door, you may not be able to close it. That's why when people tell me, well, oh, Joe, there's this house you went into. There's a portal there. I said, okay, well, if there really is a portal there, then you need to work to close it. Don't go in there with, you know, people start, conjuring and provoking, because you don't know what's going to come through. I said, something could come through and attach itself to you, or go after something or someone that you most love, like your family, your children. You think that's funny now? This is what I say to people, you know, but it's all about money. People want to rent out their house, or they'll buy a house and it's okay. The house is 300 years old. Let's make up some story that the place is haunted, invite people to come and pay us a lot of money. And people do it because they're gullible. They don't know any better. I'm like, well, there may be something there. There may not be there, but why would you provoke it? Why would
you do that?
It totally goes against what I'm trying to teach people. But when people see dollar signs, that all they want is money, you know, it's not about money. You know, trust me, I don't have any money. I'm broke because of this work. You know, when someone needs my help and they can't afford to even pay my travel expenses, don't worry about it. I'll be there. And it comes out of my pocket. But, you know, that's what I signed up for. Like I said, this is a vocation. It's not an occupation. You know, I just want people to be very careful and educate themselves before they go storming into these places with their cameras, hoping to get the money shot to load up on their social media pages. That's not what this is about, at least for me anyway. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a viewer, her name is Urbex Amanda Explorer, and she asked, for the last 2 years, I get visits from a woman who passed in NL, and I don't know how to help her. She don't know. Shows me the inside her house and how she passed. What would you recommend to her? Would you recommend stay away from this and not, you know, do this? Or was this something?
I know Amanda. Hi, Amanda. Say hi to your mom for me. That's a very good question. So I know Amanda, this is something, if you need my help, reach out to me privately about this. But what you can do is you can pray for this person. You can pray for the soul. Okay, pray for one of their loved ones to help them. But I'll need you to get in touch with me and fill me in a little bit more on it. But anybody can help anybody. You know, God, in my belief system, the Bible says Jesus gave us all the power to cast out demons in His name. It's not like Joe Frankie cast you out. It's going to eat me for lunch. You know, it's in the power and the blood of Christ cast you out. You know, and Ed said to me one day, I'll never forget this. He's like, you know, kid, he goes, the devil knows who we are and he hates us. Not and us in particular, not because just because we're made in the image of God, but because we're willing to stand up to him and spit in his eye, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm not afraid anymore. I'm very apprehensive and I'm very respectful of the power, and everyone should be. All right. But I have a saying. I have a saying that I say all the time: faith and fear cannot coexist. And what I mean by that is, if you're very deeply rooted in your faith, and your faith is unshakable, then you have nothing to fear. They cannot coexist on the same level because you know, your faith and your fear is really, you know, in the unknown. You know, so it's like if you have faith and you turn behind you and look who's in your corner, you know, I'm not afraid. I'm too old and grumpy to be afraid anymore. But you have to be respectful of the power of these things.
Absolutely. Okay?
And it's not all bad. It's just, it's all that about that free will and intention. If you go in there guns blazing and you go in there with a Ouija board and like, ah, come on, you know, we're not afraid. You know, come on, throw something across the room, slam a door, open a window. And I'm sitting there going, oh my God. You know,
like going to a restaurant and ordering food and then getting scared or upset when the waiter brings you exactly what you asked for.
Well, you know, I'm probably not going to make a lot of friends by a lot of stuff I said, but you know what? I'm just telling you how it is, folks.
Hey, no, it's true.
This is what I've lived for 40 years. If my phone's not ringing, I'm happy. People are like, oh, I haven't had a case. Well, we need to get cases. No, we don't. We don't. My fear is that the people that really need the kind of help that I or my colleagues can provide, that they won't find us because there's just this paranormal community, so to speak, whatever that means. You know, there's so many people out there that are inexperienced and they're in it for the wrong reasons, you know, i.e. personal gain, fame, money. If you're in this work for the right reason, there's no money in it for you. Okay.
Yep.
There's no money in it for you. And you should be okay with that. You know, if you're honestly looking to help people that are afflicted, whether good, bad, or indifferent, you know, not everything's bad. Some people don't have a paranormal issue. They just want someone to listen to them and help them understand what's going on, you know. And that's a lot of what I do. I've got a lot of stories. I don't talk about them too much because nothing really happened. But I've got a lot of cases that I've worked where, you know, you'd be out there and I'd spend days, weeks, months, years sometimes working with families and nothing happens. And like, I don't know, Joe, whenever you leave, this happens or that happens. And I'm like, well, do this, this, or this. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's just one member of the family that's afflicted. Sometimes the whole family witnesses stuff. So
each case
is different. And you got to figure out, okay, how long have you lived here? 20 years. Well, when did the activity start? About 3 years ago. All right, well, let's stop right here and work backwards. What happened 3 years ago that may have triggered something? All right, whether it was something paranormal or maybe it was something psychological. Was there a traumatic event? You know, like an accident or a death in your family or something like that that traumatized you. Is someone, you know, addicted to drugs or alcohol or pornography even? And I don't say that to be funny. Pornography is an addiction, you know, for some people. And it's also a doorway, you know. It could be a form of psychosis or schizophrenia or something like that. Some event in your life 3 years ago that triggered what you're experiencing or you say you're experiencing now, whether it be real or not. But what I'd say people is like, look, people, they're not making this up. They're not lying to me because I'd be able to tell. But in their mind, it's very real. So sometimes it's just offering comfort, just lend a shoulder to cry on kind of thing. I'll go out to someone's house, have a cup of coffee at their kitchen table, talk to them. I might go around the house and do a blessing and you know, leave them with a St. Benedict medal or a miraculous medal or something. And I'll give them some homework to do. And if someone's serious about wanting help, they'll do exactly what I ask. And that's one way we can tell about if people aren't serious about it. You know, I've asked people, look, go back to over the last 3 years and just make a list of whatever you can remember. And 2 weeks later, I'll talk to them again. Oh, yeah, I haven't done it yet. Well, then you really don't want my help. And you probably don't need my help. Some people need help, but it's not the kind I can provide, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll try to steer them in the right direction. But It is very now gratifying.
You probably have tons of people that contact you. So like you really, your time is very limited. So like for someone to come and try to fake something to you or try to act like there's something that they're not, really wastes a lot of your time. So you really have to do your due diligence, obviously. And I respect that completely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not all rainbows and sunshine. Sometimes dealing with people, you're dealing with them individually or as a whole. I would do is I interview the family and individual the family independently, and sometimes all together to see if the stories jive. You know, we're on the phone for 2 hours the other night. Some of my colleagues and I talking to this gentleman that started out as I got a demonic issue, and it turned into aliens and alien abduction. And he started talking about this, that, and the other thing. But I said, well, let's try to get to the root of the problem. And, you know, it turned into abandonment issues. My dad abandoned us when I was 7 years old and this, that, and the other thing. I definitely feel the guy's got an issue, but I don't think it's a paranormal issue.
He's
never spoken to a professional. I asked him if he spoke to a professional. He said no. He said he had some he had some pictorial evidence. I asked him to send me the evidence. He wasn't comfortable sending it over the internet or sharing it. I'm like, well, you know, I've spent 2 hours on the phone with you and a couple of my colleagues, and we just went round robin, and we ended up back in the same place we started. And we're like, look, we really, I said I think you could benefit from some psychiatric help, or even talk to your priest. Oh, the priest won't talk to me. Have you tried?
Yeah.
He says he's a devout Catholic, but I said, talk to your priest, talk to psychiatrists, talk to your doctors. Not only has he not done any of that, he wasn't willing to do so. So I said, well, you want my help. I'm giving you the best advice I can based on what you're telling me, and you're refusing to do it. What do you want me to do for you? Now I've wasted 2 hours of my time. My wife's not happy with me because that's 2 hours I could have taken her to a movie. And I'm not even kidding. Yeah. My wife is a saint because I spend a lot of time away from her and the kids when they were younger. My kids are all adults now. But, I spend a lot of time away from them working, helping others, and it's very gratifying. And I wouldn't be where I am today without her support. But I don't blame her when she gets upset at me sometimes because I'm out helping other people, but I'm neglecting them, and that's not fair. So if someone's wasting my time like that, I'm not going to be happy about it, And I was on the phone, with my friend Tom and Stacia and Father Bob. And we had a conversation afterwards. I'm like, this is just a waste of time. The guy's not listening. Very easily triggered. I had mentioned to him, I said, well, I firmly believe that you believe this. And he's like, well, wait a minute. Did you just say that I believe this? I go, yeah, that's exactly what I said. You believe that this really happened to you. I said, whether it did or not, I don't know. I said, I don't know you from a hole in the wall.
And the brain can visually make that happen. Like they can visually make you, your brain will actually, after a while, it'll actually trick you into believing what you're believing, after a long enough time. So, obviously you're absolutely right about that. He could have been definitely believing that.
Well, the mind is a very powerful thing.
Definitely.
So one of the first questions I ask people is, how much TV do you watch? How many of these YouTube channels do you watch? Because the seed sometimes not only has been planted, it's been nurtured and watered and fed. It's like it's psychosomatic. You've watched so much of this crap that now you're starting to believe. For example, you sit there all by yourself at 2 o'clock in the morning in the pitch dark watching The Exorcist. How many people have done that?
laughing
my ass off. But the thing is, when that movie's over and it's time to go to bed and you're all alone, every little creak and noise that you hear, you're going to start looking around like, uh-oh, do I have a demon here? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. But seriously, it gets in your head. And then I always tell people, always look for a natural solution to an issue. Instead of the supernatural. mean, because what is paranormal? Yeah. Para means above. Above, which is normal, or outside the scope of scientific explanation. All right? But not too much is. If you really look into it, I hear scratching in the walls and growling. And well, do some digging. Maybe you got squirrels or raccoons in the attic or something. You got mice or rats. And I've had cases where we found evidence of that, you know. Yeah. But look for a natural solution. But a lot of people out there don't want that. They want it so bad to be paranormal because they think it's cool. Yeah, baby, it's cool. No, it's not cool. No. For someone that's really afflicted by something horrible, it's not cool.
Absolutely.
And that's insulting to me, and it's insulting to them. You know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you want to know what? I want to end on that right there because you're absolutely right on that.
Oh, we out of time already?
Yeah. I tell you what, we got to have you come back on, Joe, because we got so much to talk about. I tell you, our whole podcast, what we believe in, is about going in with respect and dealing with these spirits with respect because we're not equipped to be doing provocation in any way. So we keep that to the professionals like yourself. But, you know, we obviously respond with respect. You know, I know. I feel you. I know you don't want to do it. You know, I totally understand it completely. It's dangerous, you know, definitely. But I appreciate your time, man, so much. Like, so much.
Thank you.
Like, thank you.
I had a great time. I appreciate you guys are so gracious. I'd love to come back on. Let me know.
I definitely will.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Joe.
All right. Bye, guys. Take care.
Bye. Wow, babe, what did you think?
I love Joe. I don't know. He's awesome. His energy is amazing. He's so knowledgeable. I mean, there's just so much I could say, honestly. I mean, if you've never met him or talked to him in person, I mean, he's amazing.
Yeah,
he really is.
Yeah, we got to talk at the paranormal thing that we did together, this conference thing that I talked about. And it was cool to meet him when I first met him. And he's been just a great friend and everything all the way around. Just a great person. I mean, the work that he does is very serious. And him expressing what he's expressing tonight is so important to show our viewers this because they really need to understand that this is serious. This is not a joke. This field is not a joke. It's something serious, and a lot of bad things can happen to you if you're not really equipped for what you are doing.
Right. And then not even just that, like the amount of research that actually goes into handling a case, like the kind of cases that he handles, it's like he said, it's months to years.
Mm.
And I mean, people think you can go in and get it accomplished in, you know what, a couple hours.
Yeah, no. In a 45-minute slot on TV.
Right.
Yeah. But thank you guys so much for tuning in for another episode of Talking with the Source. We truly appreciate you guys. Always, thank you so much. Everyone listening on Spotify, Apple Music, everything, just Google Podcasts, all that. Thank you so much for listening. We truly appreciate the support. Keep tuning in. We have all new episodes. We have an episode tomorrow with Phantom Detectives, so tune in for that. We will be putting a post up to let you know what time it is, so we'll be excited to have them on. But thank you guys so much for watching, and we will see you soon.
Now, this is the area where apparently you can hear the whistling of Art, or Arthur, the man that died of a heart attack, constructing this part of the lift locks.
Lit up, unless we went back, we actually went right down there. It's just trees. Biggest animal we're going to get in here is a badger or a fox. Deer, potentially, yeah. But if it was a deer, we'd be seeing it.
Did you live here?